I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about Indy's flourishing event scene. We're going to talk about what has made Indianapolis such an attractive location for conventions, conferences, festivals, and other festivities. My guests are Josh Baker. He's the owner of Do317.com, MOKB Presents, and the Hi-Fi. Danielle Look, general manager for Do317.com, and Jason King, entertainment manager of The Vogue and owner of Indie Mojo. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about Indy's flourishing event scene, about really how we got to the point where we are kind of a destination and a place for a lot of activity. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Josh Baker. He is the owner of Do317.com. We're going to talk about what that is, as well as MOKB Presents and the Hi-Fi. Danielle Look, who is the general manager for Do317.com, and Jason King. He's the entertainment manager of The Vogue and the owner of Indie Mojo. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks for having
us. Thanks.
It's good to have you all here. So I want to sort of start on the what I sort of alluded to as the premise of this. Those of us of a certain vintage can recall the times when Indianapolis was routinely referred to as Indy No Place or Naptown, and it wasn't, you know, hadn't gotten its later kind of almost hipster connotation. It was it was a derogatory time that the place was asleep. There was the story that probably never occurred but was alluded to often of the flight attendant upon landing in Indianapolis who informed all of the passengers that they could either set their watches back 1 hour or 25 years, whichever they preferred. How did we get to the point where now Indy is a vibrant scene? I'm going to start with you on that one, Josh, but I'd like to hear everybody's thoughts. What sort of led to the transformation? Then we're going to talk to the range of activities here.
I think it's any number of things. I think most importantly, the folks that grew up in that time frame. I'm 41, so I'm the old man in the room right now. But I do
even,
remember those
not
days.
Not even close, Josh.
second base, okay, second. But I remember those times, and even the days at the Vogue when it was just primarily a lot of cover acts and things like mm-hmm. that. And it was a time when I think all of us were growing up, and now folks like myself and Jason and other people in the market have. Having grown up through that time frame, wanted to do something about it and make a change. We're all passionate folks and had led us to kind of, creating all these new opportunities that exist out there. There's just a lot more people doing things, and I feel like that the audience is more receptive to it than they were in the past. And I think that's any number of things, but I just think that the audience has grown up a little bit. So,
You made reference to the Vogue. Those of us who are of a certain vintage remember that was the time when it was about the only place, other than one of the really huge concert acts or whatever, where you could hear live music in the city that was, a level above, the owner of the bar's nephew coming in or something
right.
like that. And even the Vogue, as you point out, was a lot of cover acts and all of that. What accounted for the transformation? Would you say, Jason?
I think the biggest transformation that we've seen has actually happened in probably the last 3 years. As you know, the the Vogue kind of split its time between top 40 dance club nights and mm-hmm. concerts. We did an event called Retro Rewind on Wednesday nights that ran forever, and then a Saturday night dance club as well. We would do concerts every Friday and then sporadically during the week. What we started to notice is that the young crowd that came to the dance clubs, that crowd started to kind of diminish and fall off, and it seemed like the young people, they don't get in a car with their friends like we all used to and go try to find an adventure. They're all using their smartphones or the internet or what have you to find exactly what they're looking for when they're looking for it. So the Vogue, you know, pretty much stopped getting the weekend walk up of Broad Ripple and became a destination venue. So we've done away with the dance club aspect and now are actively trying to do 150 to 160 concert nights a year with 3 to 4 per week.
Wow. So that's a significant transformation. You talk about the difference in how people seek out their entertainment or their stimulation, which sort of sets up the whole do317.com. Danielle, talk to me a little bit about what do317.com is.
Yeah. We're a really comprehensive event calendar, not specific to any one genre or even just specific to live music. We've got listings for the for performing arts, for food events, for kid-friendly events. We've got a wide range of everything that's going on across the city, and we can customize it, your view, to exactly what you're looking for. And the comment that I was going to make when Josh was talking about just the way that it's grown, the scene has grown, is seen kind of leaders emerging. So it's not a zero sum game. We're all out there working towards the same goal. Excuse me, working towards the same goal to have a culturally relevant city to be living in. So as the scene has started to kind of segment, these leaders emerge and kind of cater to all the different interests that are out there. Like Jason said, people are looking for exactly what they're looking for, caters to just their interests. And so as it started to segment, some people might argue that that was a negative thing, but I think it's actually positive in that we're able to cater to very specific interests.
Josh, as the owner of Do 317, how did you arrive at the name as opposed to Do Indy? I mean, I know it's a reference to the area code, but Do Indy or any other sort of name, how did you arrive at Do 317?
Well, we're part of a larger network. We own and operate our own. Our own city here in terms of Do317, but we're part of a larger network that has sister sites in about 18 other cities. And all of those towns were always based off of area code. So to be in sync with our partners in the other cities, we kept the 317 area code.
Okay. And, you know, when we talk about all of this growth, in what areas have we seen the most sort of exponential growth? I'm going to stay with you on that one, Josh.
In terms of what areas of entertainment or options?
Yeah, options. Let's just assume I want to go out somewhere the evening. I don't know what I want to do. What are the places that most people are saying, this is what I want to do?
Well, I think general category-wise, it's music and food right now. Mm-hmm. And the food scene flourishing has been a huge win for everyone because it also kind of drives the music scene as well. In terms of places, I mean, it'd be really hard to pick just one. There's so many that are kind of on everyone's radar at the moment. But from concerts, which is, you know, things that I'm used to speaking to, the lawn at White River State Park, the Vogue, obviously, and the addition of the Hi-Fi being a smaller concert space, expanding options into new spaces like Garfield Park and places like that were traditionally not music venues are creating new all-ages opportunities for fans. So those are just a few kind of off the top of my head. But
and I should ask, Jason, how does the Vogue make use of Do 317?
Well, Do 317, I would say, has been our most effective marketing partner, at least for the last 3 years. We've got some great radio partners as well, but Do317 is effectively our online street team, if you will, because of what we mentioned earlier, how most of the concert goers are using social media or web-based platforms. It allows us to put our content right at the forefront of their feeds. And also it's a great tool for marketing and capturing email addresses and different things like that of people that are our concert goers. And I would say the most effective tool that we use Do317 for are on nights where we have like a cover band or a show that we would what we in the industry call papering, meaning where you, you know, from the old school term of printing tickets and just papering the city and giving tickets out to try to get people in to get them exposed to a new band. We've changed that and we save trees by making the shows, you know, RSVP on Do317 for free entry. You know, they enter their email information and whatnot, which, you know, we're able to collect that data and market. But also it gives us a guest list of people that are interested in the show. They send it to us a couple hours before doors and customers show up and their names are on a list. And all they had to do was go on do317.com. And that saves the paper and the printing and everything. It's a great tool for us.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Indy's flourishing event scene here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So I'm gonna start with Danielle, but I want everybody's thoughts because in some ways it's interesting. There were fears originally with the development of this new technology and all of these new platforms that it was going to remove us from that sense of live connection. But it's like, in some ways, it sounds like it has revitalized music scene and a lot of other cultural activities at the grassroots level, which at least initially people were afraid that's what it was going to kill. I mean, it was going to administer the death blow. What accounts for that, Danielle?
Well, I failed to mention when I was talking about the way that Do317 works, one really cool feature about the site and the app is that it sorts events by popularity. That's organic popularity. Mm. So as people come on the site and they look for events that they're interested in and they add it to their calendar on Do317, that elevates the popularity of the event. So as more and more people start signing up for the free RSVP entry shows at the Vogue, that raises the popularity of that. And therefore, when people come to browse the listings, they can see at the very top what the handful of most popular events in the city are that day. But you can also use that to dig. If you don't want to be at the most popular event and you want to discover something or something more underground, you can filter through, go a little bit deeper in the listings and find something a little more underground and maybe go out and meet new people or discover a new band that way.
I do want to hear Josh's thoughts, but what do you when you say go underground, what do you mean by that?
I personally have outgrown the phase where I like to be in a room with thousands of people where, you know, you're far away from the stage and, you know, some people like that crowd mentality, but I personally like more intimate shows. So I want to go to a smaller club where I can hear my friend standing next to me as we're having a conversation and enjoy the music together. So I just like kind of smaller, more intimate is what I mean by underground.
Okay. Josh, your thoughts?
I mean, going back to your comment on the technology, being a promoter for as long as I have, I was a promoter before social media and a lot of these things, and it was different then. It was very grassroots flyering, picking up the phone and calling people, hey, are you coming out tonight, that type of thing. And I think that social media and internet has made that discovery portion much easier. From a musical standpoint, there wasn't many ways to find out if you liked a band back then unless you spent the money and bought the record. Now there's a lot of, you know, Spotify or iTunes, whatever it may be, or YouTube. You can go check out a band. And so people are finding and discovering more things faster and easier. And I feel like that gives them a little more buy-in to actually be willing to plop down money for a ticket for an event. And I think that's a really big factor to consider when we're talking about all this is the accessibility of all of those things, not just finding the events, but the music or learning about a new chef or whatever it may be. all those things are kind of driving that interest.
Jason.
I think it's really plain and simple is that, you know, young people, they don't actively find news. They're not looking for news. They don't wake up in the morning and get ink on their fingers by opening the paper. News finds them via social media. Every young person wakes up and the first thing they do is grab their phone. And then
if they weren't clutching it in their hands, what they
exactly. Yeah. So that's what our job is how do we force our way into that feed?
Yeah. We are talking about Indy's flourishing event scene here on No Limits. My guests are Josh Baker, is the owner of Do317.com, MOKB Presents, and the Hi-Fi, Danielle Look, who is general manager for Do317.com, and Jason King, who's the entertainment manager for The Vogue and the owner of Indie Mojo. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Indy's flourishing event scene on No Limits today. My guests are Josh Baker. He is the owner of Do317.com, MOKB Presents, and the Hi-Fi. Danielle Look, who is the general manager for Do317.com, and Jason King, who is entertainment manager of The Vogue and the owner of Indie Mojo. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Kathleen has done and shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Kathleen writes that she is the owner of Book Mamas in Indianapolis, and she says, I'm having trouble putting my events on the Do317 calendar. Is there a way for me to contact someone for help? Thank you. That one's served right up for you, Danielle.
Absolutely.
Don't even have to swing that hard. So.
Yeah, we welcome anyone and everyone in the city who wants to add their events to Do317. send us a quick email, CM, that stands for Content Management, at Do317, or you can also get us at events@Do317 and just send us a message and let us know. We'll help you out. And if it's just a one-off event, we're happy to add that to the website for you. But I encourage all GMs and promoters out there to get in touch with us, and we can give you access to add your own events and help us help our users find your events.
What sort of events, what's the parameter? What do you consider an event that would appear on Do317?
The gamut, it's all there. Everything from, the big shows at the Vogue that everybody knows and is talking about and buying tickets for, all the way down to, small yoga studio events, free events, kid-friendly events in the park. There's not
sports,
much
sports, fitness, a lot of the run walks you can find on there.
Yeah, okay. Not much that we'll say no to.
Happy hours.
Okay, so presumably I'll pick Kathleen's example here. If there's a reading at one of the bookstores,
absolutely.
That'll go
and
on
we
there.
We traditionally list a lot of Book Mama's events, and we have a number of different ways how things come in. And so, kind of that first step of communication of them reaching out to us, we can figure out what's easiest for them. But we have ways that, if they post an event to Facebook, we can make that automatic. So it just automatically goes
on
to
yours.
Yeah. So there's a lot of that technology that exists.
But they first have to contact you. There's no way to automatically upload onto your site.
Oh, yeah, there is. They can go on the site right now and just add an event. And you click on my 317 tab and it says add event. And you can just, it's got a small form that you can fill out. It takes about a minute to add an event.
Oh, okay. And then we've gotten another email question from a listener named Shannon. Says, having investigated Do317, the number of events happening in the metro area every day is probably way more than most folks realize. What are the panelists' big three favorites and unsung favorites? Jason, I'm going to throw that one to you first, but obviously they want to hear from all three of you.
Could you be more specific on what are you asking exactly?
Well, it's actually a question from Shannon says, what are the panelists' big three favorites and some unsung favorites? I can't talk. That's a liability in radio.
Okay. one of my favorite events is the Food Truck Fridays.
Okay.
That happens outside of the old National Center, formerly the Murat Theater downtown. All the different tastes of the food trucks and live music and just a lot of people everywhere. It happens first Fridays, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, every first Friday. So, I mean, that would be one that I is one of my favorites. Unsung.
I think it's a little bit of what Danielle was referring to as the underground, the stuff you've got to go deep for.
I think we're so much on event overload that sometimes we filter it out. But a couple of places I like.
Yeah, for you guys, an event is being able to stay home.
Exactly.
Yeah, my backyard barbecue is the unsung
Busman's
event.
Holiday
that's my favorite.
Yeah. How about you, Danielle?
Well, one that's fresh on my mind right now, I've got a couple of like my favorite big events that happen in Indianapolis every year. One was just this past weekend, the Feast of Lanterns over at Spades Park, which most people probably don't even know Spades Park is a thing or have driven by it and didn't even realize it. But it's a great event because it's all day long and it's a great chance for kids to get out in the park. But they bring in a really great roster of live talent every year. I remember seeing Rev Payton's big damn band back there.
It's
okay.
You're allowed to say that on the radio. You're allowed to say that.
Before the band was doing national tours, international tours, and so that was really cool. And it's a great event because as it gets dark, they have paper lanterns strung up throughout the whole park. And then when it gets dark, the kids do a parade and they count down and then they turn the lanterns on. And it's great exposure for them being so young, being able to be present for that live music. And then another one of my favorite events every year is the Indie Pride Festival, which is not, I mean, all that underground, but just from the parade in the morning, I joined the Pride of Indie bands and started participating in the parade every year and just going out and seeing the diversity all day, talking to people, making new friends. Indie Pride is another one of my favorites.
We were talking about this a bit before we went to the break, but... And normally I try to phrase the questions neutrally and not advanced. But I think my thesis here is that in part because there has been such a growth in this, there's some hunger driving it. And I think for whatever reason, maybe because of the explosion in technology and the fact that we now talk, you know, through so many electronic means, people are much more hungry for these live, personal experiences than they were 15 or 20 years ago. Maybe because it's a less dominant part of their lives and they have to seek it out more. And I guess I'd like to talk a little bit about why, because it is exploding. And it sounds like, from what you're telling me, no matter how much is going on, there's a hunger for even more.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, I'm going to start with you.
I mean, I think a good example of that is think about the brewery scene.
Yeah.
I mean, even 8 years ago, we had little, if any, local breweries. I know there's a couple of brewpub that have been doing this for a long time, but for the most part, that was something that people didn't realize that they really needed, I don't think. And then, because it didn't exist at the time. And so, Sun King, is one of the breweries that really helped pave that way and make it more accessible. And I think that a lot of other breweries, I kind of always wondered, like, is this ever going to stop, But it just keeps going and going. And it's a lot of great breweries making great beer, and people keep going. And now it's almost becoming like the neighborhood pub. It's very neighborhood-centric. And so I think that, yes, you're correct. People are hungry for those things. And I always ask myself every year when we're looking at our summer calendar going, I can't remember a time when there was ever this many shows and events in Indianapolis in a summer. Are people going to go? Mm-hmm. Is this going to stretch the dollar too far? And every year they continue to keep showing up, which is great for us. It means we're all doing the right things and on the right track and pushing us to be better promoters and come up with more creative events and things. So,
Jason, did you have a thought? I noticed you were...
My thought is 5 years ago, even before that, everybody sort of made fun of what you would consider a hipster, the too cool for school type people. But as it turns out, the young folks, I mean, there's a huge shift and a search for individuality and new things, and you know, hipsters aren't really made fun of anymore. That's just the norm, and I think that's really sparked a new love for live music and a search for culturally relevant activities in our city. That's a generational thing.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Ken. Again, if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Ken writes, what kind of effects do anti-LGBT legislative pushes such as RFRA have on not only attracting national event planning, but possibly undoing the progress that India has made to become more culturally relevant? Has the outspoken socially conservative Pence administration hurt momentum that was garnered from Governor Daniels' approach of typically keeping these social issues out of the political spotlight?
Well, this is a very, very touchy subject, and it's different for different people. So if you ask this convention to – or ask this question to the to someone at Visit Indy, this response is probably going to be much different. When all this was happening, we certainly had and fielded our fair share of displeasure from artists and their agents and their managers – specifically for acts that were playing here around that time frame, and it was for that 2 or 3 week period, it was pretty rough. I mean, we all looked pretty bad. We kind of felt like that we had just kind of unraveled all this work that we had just done, and that was really disheartening. I think that after the initial shock of it wore off, I think people are smarter than this, and they realize that this doesn't represent Indianapolis. This doesn't represent our views. And I think, you know, after some conversation with the artists and managers, we're like, you know, we're the same guys doing the same thing we've done before. We've always been supportive of your artists. We've always had open minds. It's not anything different. That's why you like working with us. And so a lot of those conversations happened, and we became, I guess, resellers again. We had to resell our city back and say, this is not what we're all about. In our world, that's pretty much died off now. That's not relevant anymore. Every now and then, there might be a specific artist that will bring it up and ask specifically, as you know, have things changed? Is this like this? And we always just said, hey, use this as your opportunity to speak out. You know, we're with you. Come play your show and use it as a platform and speak out against it. So that's my two cents.
Did you have to make the argument? I know there was a, I think it was an op-ed piece in the New York Times when North Carolina adopted a similar measure. From the owner of an absolutely wonderful independent bookstore in Asheville, North Carolina, called Malaprops, wrote and said to writers who were saying, you know, we're not going to come to North Carolina now to do events because they've done this. And her argument was, well, you realize you're punishing the people who are fighting this, too, by doing that.
Right.
That hurts. Did you have to have those kinds of conversations during that period?
Yeah, that's pretty much the nature of it. And I think the gut, you know, the gut reaction for most people is like, oh, we're not going to go there. But then I think if they sit and think about it, if you'd have looked at any amount of social media in Indianapolis around that time frame, you know, trending for weeks, is that this is not us. This is not what we're about. And I think that people realize that, oh, wow, okay, this is the voice of one person or a very select few group of people. And that's not what the collective population of Indianapolis believes.
Are there certain events on Do 317, Danielle, that you won't accept or just strike down? Is it completely an open forum?
We try and keep our events mostly focused on Indianapolis, central Indiana. So sometimes we have that conversation on, you know, Bloomington, Lafayette, all the way up to Fort Wayne. You know, what's relevant? What are our users in Indianapolis willing to drive, make that drive for? So sometimes that's kind of where we draw the line, that and, like, you know, we're not going to put your house party up on the site. But outside of that,
I guess so. There are not any content restrictions or anything like that you would put.
No, it's uncensored, and we've not had that issue yet where there's been something so blatantly terrible that we have to take a look at it. But yeah, I mean, it's a place where anyone can put up their event and promote it.
Gotten another email from a listener named Steve. Again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Says, I'm curious how much they think the overall change in Indy from a brain drain city to one where younger professionals are choosing to live and work has driven the expansion of event opportunities and venues. Jason, I'm going to start with you on that one.
I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, what are they still saying we're the Silicon Valley of the Midwest? Is that a real thing? But I do agree that there are a lot of opportunities for young people to move to Indianapolis and get great jobs and have expendable income. And I do think that that correlates directly to our ability to sell tickets and get people out to events. So I think he did hit the nail on the head there.
Josh, I'm going to throw this because, as you pointed out, we're the ones of the most mature vintage in this discussion here. Has the crowd become more, the people who attend these events, become more diverse in the past 15 years? And how have they changed the event scene in Indy, if they have become?
Yeah, I think it's definitely more diverse, younger for starters. But, you know, just speaking from looking at the crowds at our events, demographics and female versus male, those types of things, you know, I've seen a lot more women coming out to shows recently than I have in the past, a lot younger. And all the things we've talked about so far in terms of their they're very intelligent. They're very savvy, and it's a different kind of a crowd than it used to be. I don't know how I could say this and be PC, but it was back in the days, it was just a little more, it was a little rougher and a little, you know, just more like a kind of rock and roll. Now it's just a little bit more like, you know, it's like you're, it's not like a classroom, I guess, but things are more tame, and people are there for the experience and the music, and they don't want to ruin it by doing all these other things like that may have happened in the past. And it just feels like that they're just a lot smarter overall. And I don't know what drives that, but for our shows, we rarely have any issues at our shows, and that speaks to the type of person that's there, and we love that.
What are the acts that draw the biggest followings? I mean, the events that are the most reliable attendance gatherers. I'm going to start with Jason on that one.
Man, that's a great question. If I had a crystal ball, I would...
yeah, he'd be making a lot more money and driving a Ferrari.
This
to
gets
show.
Asked five times a week with
yeah.
us. So.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Every genre has consistent draws, mm-hmm. And every genre has risky draws. As a venue or a marketer or a promoter, you have to put yourself into a situation where you have the best chance to come out on top.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Abby. And again, if you want to track us down on Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. Abby says, what are the most popular events coming up? And are there any new trends in the event scene? I'll throw that one your way, Danielle.
You kind of stumped me.
Wasn't me, it was Abby. Abby was going after you on that one.
Well,
so
I mean, Josh just pulled up this wonderful app on his phone called Do317. And as I mentioned earlier, all the events are sorted by popularity. So just looking at the weekend ahead, you know, Jason already mentioned First Friday Food Truck Festival.
And all the First Friday events happening in general.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably the best answer right there is this weekend is First Friday. So if you've never been over to the Murphy Building and Fountain Square and all the other merchants in the area, people just migrate to downtown and Fountain Square. And most events are free and just hop around and take in a lot of different art, play some pinball, grab a beer. It's a great time. Fountain Square is usually just bustling on First Fridays.
How far ahead can people put their events? I mean, presumably if I have an event scheduled for 2020, will you take that or?
Sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How far out, like, and do you can sort then, I presume, by time frame and say, okay, I want something this weekend?
We've got events on the site right now reaching well into the end of 2017 already. But yeah, it's a great planning tool because it's you can click on a calendar. So if you've got family or friends coming into town 2 weeks from now, it's great for planning and kind of scoping out what's out there.
We're also at the mercy of what when these events get announced. So some folks don't announce their event for tomorrow until today. Yep. And so that event's only going to be on there for one day.
We are talking about Indy's event scene and the way it is growing. My guests are Josh Baker, Danielle Look and Jason King. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881 or send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about Indy's flourishing events scene. My guests are Josh Baker. He's the owner of Do317.com, MOKB Presents, and The Hi-Fi. Danielle Look, who is the general manager of Do317.com, and Jason King, who is the entertainment manager of The Vogue and the owner of Indie Mojo. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can go the old-fashioned route and pick up the phone and give us a call at 866-476-3881, as Kim has done. Kim, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. This is Certainly. My favorite subject. I can't live without live music.
Great. What's
my
on your mind?
My husband and I have been putting on house concerts for 10 years, and house concerts have a broad spectrum from a single guitar player playing acoustic guitar in a small house on a stool to what my husband does, which is a full stage, lights, recording equipment, the whole bit. And we have from 30 to 50 people who come and just love it. They make a donation. All the money goes to the band. We've had all the local artists. We've had people from Norway, from Cornwall. And I just can't tell you what it does for people. It's what one of your guests said about the intimacy of a small group. I love the venues in Indianapolis, but I also love the small intimacy without the chatter, without the football game on in the background. And that's what our house concert does. So there's a lot of house concerts going on in the Indianapolis area. They're hard to find sometimes because they're in people's homes, so they're usually through word of mouth. But I just don't know what I'd do without our live concert series. We're free-range concerts, and we just make a lot of people happy, and that's what we do, and we love it. So that's all I wanted to tell you.
Well,
thanks for doing the show.
Certainly. Thank you for calling and sharing that story. So
you're welcome anytime to come to one of our house concerts. I would love for you to come in and experience it. It's very magical.
And Danielle, I think, wants to solicit something.
Yeah. Kim, can you tell us one more time what the name of your house concert series is?
We're called Free Range Concert.
Okay.
And I can give you the email address after the show. We like to sort of screen people, and I've invited some people from WFYI to come on, and so we know quite a few people from there as well.
Well, yeah, we'd love to. If you need help getting the word out there, make sure you let us know at 217.
We don't advertise. Like I said, it's nonprofit. We're not a business. It's mm-hmm. basically like a house party where all of the donations go to the musicians. We also provide them with a bed and breakfast because, as you know, most of these guys live from gig to gig, and hotels are expensive. So I always give them room and board and try to make them feel at home and give them breakfast and dinner, and they become family.
Well, I'd love to come out and check it out sometime. I used to attend the Kessler House concert series.
Oh, yeah. I know them.
Yep. So it's a great venue. It's a great way to see live music.
So
it really is. And everyone connects on such a nice, intimate little level, and it's just lovely. So
Danielle, real quickly, you gave an email where they could reach out to you.
Yeah.
Why don't you give that to Kim real quickly, and then she can contact you.
Okay, I will.
Okay.
Just simply events@do317.com.
Thanks.
Okay, I know Do317. Been there at your other venue, but I've enjoyed it very much. We had Tommy Womack at our house, and he was at Do317, and nice. Will Kimbrough, and just so many wonderful people. So thank you for doing what you do.
Certainly. Thank you very much for the call, Kim.
Uh-huh.
Thanks. Bye. Bye-bye. So we also have gotten an email from a listener named Eric. And again, if you want to reach us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. And Eric says, how does Gen Con more broadly impact indie entertainment? Because that's a huge event.
I'm happy to take that one.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's one of those things that, you know, I think as they've grown – and now starting to spread out more. It was, and early on, it was very centralized to the downtown area, so there wasn't a whole lot of things that the venues and the events outside of downtown saw as a result from that. I know the hotels and the restaurants do. But I actually work closely with the marketing director from Gen Con, and he's very very eager to create new things around it. And so I know they've been activating Georgia Street for some pretty cool stuff in the last few years. And we're already having discussions about what's going to happen in the next year or 2 years and how that's going to expand out further into Mass Ave and into Fountain Square. But they're very keen on providing interesting entertainment opportunities for them. And that's one of the reasons why they're, you know, staying here, is because they realize that Indianapolis is obviously becoming a hipper city. But, you know, the basic things in terms of meeting spaces and all those things, of course. But they also do look at, you know, the age of the audience. And are there things happening when their guests come in town? Can they have that opportunity to go out and experience something new? And I think that the size of that event and the open-mindedness of the people that are in charge really help drive a lot of the events that are happening around that.
Are there parts of the city or the metropolitan area that have not been touched by this? I mean, we've been talking an awful lot. Obviously, we can talk about Broad Ripple and downtown and Fountain Square, and those are the areas you do associate with a lot of that activity. Is it all across the metropolitan area, or are there some places where it's not happening? And Josh, you were nodding, but I saw Danielle also started nodding, so I'm going to start with her.
As you just mentioned, downtown, Fountain Square, Broad Ripple, those are the areas that come off of people's lips the most often. But there's a lot going on the west side right now. That's one that pops into my mind. Speedway, breweries popping up all over, new venues and things like that. And then also up in like Fishers and Carmel are doing a lot of great things up there. People tend to think of it as just suburbia. You know, there's nothing going on out there, but there's a lot happening on the north side as well.
We've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Gary. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Gary says, question about Do317. Is the organization viable as part of a bigger income generator, kind of like a loss leader product, or a standalone site based on traffic? Jason's smiling. Yeah.
Well,
maybe because he's glad he didn't get that question. I don't know.
No, I'm happy to answer. Yeah. I mean, it's a business that stands on its own. It was presented to us as an opportunity at a time when we were, being MOKB as concert promoters, were struggling to try and find outlets to market our events to. Things like traditional media, print media, and radio and things just didn't seem to be working at the time, and we didn't really have a online resource to find all of these different things happening. I know lots of different community calendars out there existed. It was very fragmented, and I had seen this model working in Austin and Chicago, and what attracted me to it was not only the ability to create this platform, which, you know, not to be too self-serving, was originally kind of built around giving us a tool to market events. And it just, after about 3 months, we realized, wow, this is something much bigger than this. And which has been one key important factor to us, is being very neutral as being promoters, but being neutral to our other partners and other promoters and venues in the city. And I think we've done a really good job of that. But it's a standalone business. It's for the first, you know, 3 years in, might actually be a profitable business this year. And that model goes along the lines of what some of our other cities are doing. And so it really does serve two purposes, I think. Hopefully that answers his question.
I think so. Jason, is there, with all this activity, are there populations or portions of the audience that are still being underserved? I mean, do you see potential for growth? I'm not framing that question as But is there a hunger for certain kinds of experiences that you still just can't find in Indianapolis that you might find other places?
I would say no. I mean, I feel like we have a pretty broad range of events. I mean, some of the scenes are a little smaller and a little underdeveloped, but I feel like if you're looking for something specific, there's going to be a place you can find it in Indianapolis right now.
What are the scenes that are underdeveloped, a little smaller, would you say?
I don't want to insult any scenes by calling them underdeveloped. That's for sure. But there are, you know, some genres of music that reside in the, you know, the smaller venues, you know, the more underground venues, less mainstream. But I wouldn't want to, you know, insult them.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Indy's event scene and the way it has grown. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Rev, welcome to the program. Oops. Looks like we just lost Rev. Okay. Well, we will try. Looks like we seem to be having some difficulty with the phone, so we'll clear that up. So in terms of the places that have seen the most spectacular growth, you were mentioning the West Side, Carmel, Fishers. Are there places where it's really just getting started now in Indy, where you're beginning to see? Because it sounds like those are fairly well developed. And I might add, you know, Carmel in particular has thrown an awful lot of money, time, and effort at making itself hospitable
sure.
to arts and cultural scenes. Are there places in the city where that kind of incubation is taking place right now?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's new, but, you know, Irvington's a good example of something that, you know, for us it's not new, but I think for most people they're still discovering it. But it's a, you know, great community of arts and culture and music and food, and I think the music component's probably still trying to grow over there, but just a neat little neighborhood vibe. And I think that it's one of my favorite places to go and just kind of hang out on a Thursday or Friday night. But there's also, you know, the city has identified three new areas that are part of one of their initiatives for development, and one of them being New York Street west towards, I believe, Hawville in that mm-hmm. area, which is a big focus for art. And they're taking a lot of the same path, just like they did with Mass Ave and Fountain Square, building these cultural districts. Right? They've done a really good job of providing a foundation for them to grow off of, and then letting the people in those communities kind of help carry the weight from there on out. And so I think they're trying to start some small little fires in a few other different communities. I don't have the list in front of me at the moment, but those are great signs that what you're hearing them talking about now in 5 to 6 years from now, you're going to be hearing a lot more about.
Jason, is there more that we've talked about how some of these communities have provided support and actually tried to revitalize the cultural scene? Is there more that city and state government could do, or is that sort of support needed, or even a good idea? I mean, there are people who argue, and I think Danielle was the one who's used the term organic, that when it's not necessarily state-sponsored, it springs up a little more spontaneously.
Yeah, I do feel like there's five cultural districts officially right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So some of those cultural districts are in full bloom, and there are some others that have fallen off over the years that hopefully once the city, once they get the other ones into full bloom, they can refocus and try to bring some of the older cultural districts back up to the focus of the city, for sure.
That's one. It's an addition to this, I guess. You're speaking more towards cultural districts in general.
Yeah, well, or any sort of.
I think an important thing to think about here is a good reference. Went to Toronto on a Indy Chamber trip. I'm a member of the Advanced 317 team, and one of our things was taking a look at what the government in Canada was doing to support their local musicians,
mm-hmm.
And how much of the radio is dictated that they must play local music, and how much an incredible amount of funding that their local artists receive to tour, to play music, to record albums. There's a grant for everything, a grant to make a record, a grant to tour in the U.S., you know, all those things. And I don't think that we'll ever get to that level here, but having that level of support for your entertainers and performers that are originating from here really helps to build and promote a healthy local community outside of Indianapolis. And I think that's important to something we want to hang our hats on eventually here, is that we've got all these talented musicians and creative type folks that are doing things from here and staying here. And they're not going somewhere else, because a lot of those great musicians have moved to have went to Nashville or went to Chicago or something like that, mainly Nashville locally, but we wanted to stay here. We wanted to make music here, make records in our studios here, and be a part of the scene. And I think that's something that we could be a whole discussion in its own down the road, but it's a very important piece.
What is the biggest challenge in keeping them here?
I think they just want to be a part of a scene that's like, I think it's that it's nationally recognized, but I also think that it's, you know, for instance, Nashville has more opportunities there, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. You're more likely to be discovered by a publisher or, you know, not so much record labels anymore, but 45 different venues to play.
Yeah, in Nashville, everyone goes out to live music.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're an artist in that city, you're going to play to a crowd every night you're out. Indianapolis isn't necessarily a guarantee.
I really do love the folks that have stayed here and are part of the team. They're making names for themselves here. You know, I just think of like Oreo Jones and those guys and like a lot of the hip hop scene here. They could easily go move somewhere else right now and do it much easier, but they're taking a little bit of the longer road, a little bit of the harder road, putting in the hard work, you know, building up their hip hop festival I just had this weekend was a huge win. Guys like that, that want to stay here and represent us. I got a lot of respect for it. And I think that they're starting to become more and more of that now. So we'll hit a critical mass at some point, I think.
And we got. Go ahead, Daniel.
Sorry, I was just going to add too, and also organizations to help support those artists. So the one that jumps out at me the most is Musical Family Tree, mm-hmm. helping artists do a music video in a day and produce an album in a day and things like that that they can't do on their own. So when organizations come in and help financially as well as, you know, just learning the ropes, that helps a lot too.
Is it? And I'm going to ask all three of your thoughts as kind of a final point. Are there parallels with the food scene and even, you know, beer and wine, where it's consuming locally has become much more important in the past 10 to 15 years? Are people here much more interested in hearing local talent rather than is the hunger for hearing music or entertainment that's locally produced greater than it was? Or are they still more interested in out of town? No one's.
I'll jump in. I mean, there's the hunger's not as intense.
It's not like a movement. Yeah.
I mean, food and beer, like everybody wants it. It's easy. It's accessible. Anybody can go do it. You know, anyone can eat food. Or, you know, the music's a little more subjective because you have all these different types of music and things like that. I don't think that desire is there. What we have to figure out is how do we get that, right? How do we take an artist and get them to the point of success and then use them as like an example of like, thank you for everyone that supported this artist. Now here's the next artist. And we start to build this up into a point of where everybody wants to go see live local music as opposed to a touring act. That would be the biggest win for all of us. And I hope we get there.
Real quick, and I'm going to have to cut the two of you off. Danielle, real quickly, if people do want to load something onto do317.com, how do they go about doing that?
You just send a real short email to events@do317.com. Send us all the information, and we'll get it posted for you.
And I think that'll have to be the last word. I'd like to thank all three of you. I'd like to thank my guests, Josh Baker, Danielle Look, and Jason King, for what has been a lively conversation about the event scene here in Indianapolis. I've enjoyed talking with you.
Great. Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
Certainly. And I'd like to thank our listeners. Also invite you all back for a fun show on Tuesday when we're going to be talking about the 50th anniversary of the original Star Trek TV show. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood, and board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations. We'll be right back.